Thank you so much. I heard a nickname that Howard said, but actually my nickname when I was in elementary school was Hulk Harina. And it has everything to do with knocking Frankie Bell's front teeth out on the playground with my baton. So Terminator, Hulk Harina, it's all good. I'm excited to be here with you today, and I have a topic that I think is going to be helpful for you in your business. How many of you in here have thought about, is our culture ready for AI? A few of you. I'm here because I want to see you in business in 10 years. And unfortunately, if you're not thinking about this, it's going to be too late. If I could turn up the lights just a little bit so I can see some of the responses here. Thank you. Here's some questions to see, are you AI culture ready in your organization, okay? So be honest. Number one, do you in your organization resist new ideas or new technology? Show of hands. Is there a resistance to some of that? It doesn't have to be you. It could be in your organization. Yeah, I see some hands. Like, it's okay. It's what I'm here for today. Number two, are there silos or lack of collaboration within your organization? No silos? Thank you for being honest. Silos are tough to break down, a few of you. Are you relying on legacy systems or products? Meaning, are you innovating? Are you looking into the future? Or are you sticking with the systems you have? One person in the back. A couple of you. It's okay. We're here. We're here to get through this. Who in here is investing in the future at the expense of the right now? Anybody in here investing in the future at the expense of what's happening right now? Good hands. In your organization, are you encouraging risk-taking? Do people feel like they can innovate and take a risk without fear of punishment? Yeah? Good. Well, we're in a time, guys, that adapting to change is more essential than ever before. How many of you saw the new president, $500 billion investment in Stargate? A couple of you? Amen. So if you're not familiar with it, his first day, he says, we're going to invest $500 billion to lead the world in AI, to lead the globe in AI. Now, that's exciting to me. And it couples with what the former president, Joe Biden, said. I love saying former with that. Okay, just kidding. He did say something, and he was right. He said, we're going to see more change in the next 10 years than we saw in the last 50 years due to the infiltration of technology. Do you remember hearing him say that? So I started to think about that. What has happened in 50 years? And let's take it apart and look at it. And then let's couple that with what has happened with leadership over those 50 years. Now, there are some timeless characteristics of leadership. I'm not here to talk to you about those timeless characteristics. Just know integrity, communication, some of those things are never going to change. They're never going to go out of style. But leadership has evolved with technology. Do you believe me? Yeah? Well, let's look at this together. Is anybody born in the 1900s? Gosh, you're just as old as I am. Isn't that cool to say to our kids? I was born in the 1900s. Cut me some slack. So 1970, so we look at the 50-year window in 10-year increments. Let's think about what was happening. Now, there are some people in here that were born in the 2000s, so we need to help them kind of remember. Was anybody in here in the workforce in 1970? Raise them loud and proud. Let's go. Right. Things probably look a little different than they did back then, right? In the 70s, that's when the first microprocessors were evolving. And in the 70s is when they found, Xerox actually found the GUI screen. There wasn't email. And when they communicated, this is for those that were born in the 2000s, they had to talk. They had to pick up the phone and call. What else do you remember about the 70s in the workforce? Memos? What was it? Telex? How did you get a hire from a talent pool in the 70s? Newspapers? What about command and control? Was there data decisions? Or was it all based off of experience and gut? Did you value John that had been with the company for 50 years because he had experience? Things have changed since then, but we haven't even got our first computers in, so we didn't even email at this point. In the 80s is where we see the rise in the personal computing. So now we're starting to, as leaders, evolve into using computers. Data analysis, communication. This is also where they started, the WWW started to come into play, the World Wide Web. I know it's hard to believe for our 2000 friends that that didn't even exist in business at the time. Does anybody in here remember sending your first email? You remember? You have mail. Leadership has evolved even since then in the 80s. What about the 90s? What happened in the 90s? Here we have Amazon and Google disrupting. Let me ask this question. Who in here used to have to use like a map, like from a map to go somewhere? An atlas, that's what it was called. Then Google comes in and we can start to Google information and find information and then print our map to where we're going. But it still wasn't on our, in our cars. What about leadership at this point? I remember my mom. She's in the workplace at this time. Her business brought in computers, and they said, your filing system, your accounting system, and everything is going to change. But she had always worked paper and files. And so for a long time, my mom was working extra hours because she didn't trust that computer. So she kept everything because she knew that computer was going to fail her, and it was not going to work. And the poor thing did double over and over and over again, until finally she started to rely on the computer. I think in the 90s, this is really where the internet and e-commerce really disrupted how we communicate, how we research information, and what happened here from a leadership perspective and business perspective is the speed of which we do business was faster. So now we're communicating through email. Has anybody in here, just for fun, ever had an email fail? Not meaning like it didn't go through, but meaning like maybe you shouldn't hit send. I think we've all had a few of those. So then let's get to the 2000s. The iPhone came out in 2007. I know this is hard to believe. The iPhone came out in 2007. So basically, Apple completely disrupted the whole market. They put a personal computer in everybody's pocket. Now we are looking at globalization for work, the mobile revolution, Facebook and Twitter came up. Our ability to communicate became very different at this point. Do you remember this? I remember when I was in college and I was at KU and it snowed. This is relevant because it snowed up north. And my car got stuck and it was about 4 a.m. on my way to work on the highway and I had no cell phone because we didn't have cell phones and I had to hitchhike. That's when hitchhiking was a little bit more safe than it is today. This opened the door for remote work here at this point in 2000. So can you see how leadership is evolving? Now, instead of command and control, we're looking at remote teams having to lead a little different, even with a little thing that in the 70s they really didn't understand, and it's emotional intelligence. Now we're talking about people that have feelings, and look who's in the workplace. Boomers, well, the silent generation, boomers, X, and the millennials are all in the workplace. In 2010, here comes cloud computing. OpenAI right now is happening towards the latter part, 2010, 2018. Did anybody ever see where IBM Watson won in Jeopardy and like upset the whole world? The computer won Jeopardy and people were freaking out. Now, we don't really honor experience like we did in the 70s. Because we have the data. So experience isn't as necessary as it was then. In the 70s, you used to promote from within a lot. And if you were the best widget maker, you could be supervisor. Now it's totally different. You might be working for somebody that's 22 years old versus somebody that is towards the latter part of their career. Everything is upside down in the workplace. And leadership has had to evolve. And then we had 2020. 2020 is AI, automation, and then there's COVID. So those companies that were innovating early now are able to serve digitally and remotely in the middle of COVID. COVID forced a lot of things to happen fast. So we're reskilling. One of the big things in the 2020s is workforce retention. Do you remember how many people exited the workforce? They're like, take this job and shove it. I ain't working here. Okay, get me going. So leadership has had to evolve. Ethical leadership, really consideration of the workforce, emotional intelligence, looking out, reskilling the workforce, and preparing the workforce for this rapid, changing, evolving model. We can go ahead and turn down the house lights. Your competitive advantage in this digital revolution is really found in your ability to lead people. And I know that seems sort of counterintuitive because you're thinking, it's all got to be about adapting and the technology, and it does, and we're going to get into that, and that's really important. But I love what the former IBM CEO said. She said, AI focus should be on people and building trust, not finding the next great tech. It's leading people, and that's really going to give you that competitive advantage. So what I like to do is I like to look at some of those companies that we can learn from that have taught us what not to do and really Monday morning quarterback them to see what went wrong. You guys want to do that? Kind of take a look back? All right. Let's look at some of these that have become obsolete and see if we can figure out why. Do you guys recognize Jeffrey? That's, well, for the people that aren't in the 1900s kids, Toys R Us. That's right. That's right. That's my daughter. She's 18 now. And, of course, that's me and my husband standing in front of Party City as we're waving goodbye. So let's look at the first one. What about Kodak? Would you believe if I told you that Kodak was the first organization, the first company, to get the digital image? You know what they said? They shelved it. They said, we're in the business of selling film, not digital. They thought it would hurt their profits if they rolled out and took the lead in digital. And guess what they did? Where's Kodak today? Trying to make a comeback. Well, let's look at Blockbuster. You remember, did anybody ever pay any late fees to Blockbuster? We have a real assistant manager to Blockbuster. Could you stand up, sir? Give him a hand. He will be signing autographs after this talk. That's neat. Well, Blockbuster had multiple opportunities to evolve into digital multiple times, but they lacked vision. They couldn't see it. They rested on their laurels. Maybe you can finish this for me. The greatest enemy of future success is success. The greatest enemy of future success is success. And oftentimes when organizations become successful, including yourselves, you quit innovating, you quit adapting, you quit evolving, you quit investing because you made it. And that's what happened to Blockbuster. And I know every one of us in here paid a lot of money in late fees to keep that company open. What about Toys R Us? Toys R Us didn't make the necessary investments in e-commerce. They missed the customer trends. The customer trends are showing people are moving into e-commerce, and they waited too long to make the investment. They held on to that business model, and they didn't evolve. They didn't see what was going on with their customers. And then, of course, BlackBerry. Who in here had a BlackBerry? Oh my goodness, this is amazing. Anybody work for BlackBerry? So let's tell the 2000s, so they probably don't know this. For the 2000s, the BlackBerry actually had keys you press with your finger. And BlackBerry couldn't believe that people would want a smooth, no-key pressing device. And so they held on to their laurels. They believed that those keys were important and they weren't going to evolve. And in doing so, BlackBerry took an early grave. So you can see here, there's a pattern: resisting change, lack of innovation, holding on to that success, not seeing where the customer trends are going. Well, let's look at a couple of them that have stood the test of the time. You want to do that? See who's in there. And what have they done? Well, of course, we know Amazon. Bezos has an incredible customer obsession. Amazon has created their own Christmas shopping day, right? Amazon Prime? Yes. Amazon started just selling books, and they evolved and evolved and obsessed over making their customers happy and giving their customers products they didn't even know they needed. Best Buy is one of my favorites up here. Best Buy is the big box stores, and a lot of the big box stores are shutting down because they didn't make that jump to the e-commerce. But Best Buy did something. They differentiated themselves. they were so smart in how they positioned, the leadership positioned the company. They said, let's give touch in a world of digital. We'll price match, we'll get people in the store. And then they have this little thing, it goes to your door and it serves you, because there's a lot of us 1900s people that aren't very good with technology, and we need a real geek to come over to the house and help us out. And they started the Geek Squad. And they gave people a place to come into the physical store to get help, and they evolved their model. And they made some key acquisitions in doing so. So they transformed their strategy. Of course, we know Apple, right? It used to be, for the 2000s folks, apples were things we ate. My daughter, who's 18, she told me that apples now have names. It's like the Honeycrisp or certain types of apple. But Apple itself means this company to her. And then, of course, you have Netflix. Now, I don't know if you know this about Netflix. Anybody in here get Netflix DVD service to your through the mail? Yes. Okay. I know for some people that don't realize that, Netflix used to do that. And then Reed Hastings, who was the CEO at the time, said, we've got to go all in on digital. Well, here, let's just ask chat. Because when he went all in on digital, they lost a lot of customers. Did you know this? You want to find out how many? It's a lot. Let's ask. When Reed Hastings went from delivering DVDs to digital strategies, how many customers did he lose?
Netflix lost subscribers in the third quarter of 2011 during the transition from delivering DVDs to digital streaming.
How many customers did they lose?
Netflix lost around 800,000 subscribers during that transition period.
800,000 subscribers. That's courageous leadership right there. Let me ask this question. Who in here does not have a subscription to Netflix? You've already moved on to something else? Or you just don't watch TV? Just don't watch TV. The majority in here has it. Thanks for sharing. So we can see here some trends in how organizations and leaders are standing the test of time. Now, there's one of my favorite case studies that I love that shows from great to almost deceased to back on top, and it's Microsoft. So we all know Bill Gates started Microsoft. We all know Microsoft dominated the market. And then in 2000, 2010, cloud starts coming. Internet, these things, it's all up in the cloud. And they transitioned to Steve Ballmer as the CEO, and they did not want to change. As a matter of fact, they resisted new ideas. They had silos and a lack of collaboration in their company. They relied on their legacy systems and products. They did not invest in the future. And they did not encourage risk-taking. Recipe for failure. And then they brought in Satya Nadella. And Nadella came in to this company and he flipped it on its head. He said, we're cloud first. Very powerful vision forward for this organization. You know, he came in and he laid off 18,000 jobs. What had happened is, because Microsoft's inability to change and evolve and lack of leadership in this time, well, they became really slow-moving, staunch, bureaucratic, heavy middle management, And Satya Nadella said something, and he said, our industry does not respect tradition. It only respects innovation. And he knew it. And he knew if he didn't do something to turn around Microsoft, Microsoft was goner. And so he changed the whole entire organization around. One leader changed the culture. Matter of fact, he was even so bold, he sent a memo to the entire organization, and he said, if you do not feel your attendance is necessary in these meetings, you have my permission to not attend. Can you imagine the CEO of the company sending that out? He recognized that if they didn't do something, they were going to be done. And I'm here to tell you today, you cannot put your head in the sand for what's coming and what's happening in technology. If you do, we'll be talking about you in past tense. You'll remember this talk, and you'll say, what could I have done? What should I have done? And how could I have done it different? Or how will I do it different in my next company? So Nadella says, don't be a do-it-all or a know-it-all, be a learn-it-all. I really believe that creativity is the new productivity in the workforce. Creativity questions a posture of learning in a society where AI is rampant in the workplace. And I know many of you are saying, well, it doesn't impact my job. I'm here to tell you, $500 billion was just placed in three companies to transform every single industry. If you think that you are not going to be impacted by it, you're being Pollyanna. It's coming. I'll even give you a perfect example of this. For those of you that don't know my background, I'm going to give it to you in 5 minutes or less. Just a small town girl from a population of 300, dogs, cats, and dead people. I blazed out of that small town in my class of seven because I was the co-valedictorian. And I said, oh, I'm never coming back to this small town again. I go to college at KU, 30-some thousand students, and, well, we could just say the small-town girl went right back to the small town, dropped out of college with 21 hours left, started stocking shelves in a truck parts store, which was a subsidiary of an oil and gas company. And that's where I got my indoctrination into the workforce. The gas company that I was working for was a Fortune 199 oil and gas company. I remember working as the shelf stalker to the front desk worker, secretary, office manager, and I went to my boss and I said to my boss, I want to do more. I want to make more money. And he says to me, well, little lady, you're going to have to go all the way up there to Kansas City and take one of them office jobs up there. And I said, okay. So I went up to Kansas City and I took one of them office jobs. Then I became the supervisor in the call center. From the call center, I went to sell gas on the NYMEX to large organizations. From there, I went back to the call center as a director, serving about 80,000 customers in Kansas. From there, I took my first executive role as the vice president of Texas Gas Service. And I was responsible for 47 cities from the gas company, from service, meter reading, corrosion, engineering, you name it, we did it, from the pipeline to the meter. All the customer service for Texas as well. And then from that, we went a huge organizational change, and we went from geography to function, and then I became the executive over all of customer service for the largest natural gas distribution company in the U.S., serving Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, 2.1 million customers. Cool ride for a small town girl. After we reorganized the entire company, over 90% of the company individuals were going to experience a change of some sort. As soon as that was done, I got called into the boss. Now, this, I had served for 15 years, 14 years in the field offices. I had never been in the big ivory tower. No. I wasn't that polished. I guess they thought I was at this point. So I'll never forget getting called into my boss's office my first day overseeing all of the customer service. And she says to me, "Crystal, we want to close Kansas, we want to close Texas, we want to move all the call center and all everybody into Oklahoma. Oklahoma was kind of the spoiled ones. And we need it done in 6 months." And I knew right then that if I did what she asked me to do, this was 2013, so keep in mind, this is when everything's kind of going towards the cloud. If I did what she asked me to do, it was going to be career suicide. We had regulators in Kansas. We had regulators in Texas that would not have been happy with this move. We probably would have had mass exodus in the call center when the agents heard about this. And my cost to replace them in Oklahoma was significantly higher. She didn't know what she was asking for, but she just knew what her pressure to do. And so I did what any good officer would do. I couldn't go and say no, but I had to say, let me show you something different. See, in this time, and even back then, one of the greatest opportunities for innovation is a problem. Problems present some of the greatest opportunities for innovation. So I went to work, and I started to study, and I knew my business. I knew the call centers. I knew how to run them. But I realized she was thinking bricks and mortar. And I could see, because I had some tech fluency, that the world was moving into the cloud. Now, we had union employees in Kansas. We had a huge Spanish-speaking population in Texas. And then we had kind of the spoiled brats in Oklahoma. No offense if you're from Oklahoma. That was the motherland. And so I didn't say no. I said, here's a 7-step transformation project to change the complete look of customer service. Connect everybody in the cloud. Bricks and mortar are out. We're going to connect them in the cloud. We're going to have one voice. We're going to have incredible service. It's going to be faster. We're going to save $1 million, improve the service to our customers, keep these organizations active and alive, hone in on the strengths, and we're going to blow the socks off. J.D. Power's award-winning customer service. And we did it. Yeah, we did it. And it's still in there today. Thank you. Yeah, it was amazing. But I'll tell you this. Thank you. Amen. That's the Lord. I take no credit. But here's the exciting part about it. Had I have said yes and stuck with status quo, I probably would have had a pink slip on my desk. But I said something else and really transformed the way that that business looks today. So what can we do and how can we think about this on what's ahead in 2030 and beyond? So here's what we're looking at in 2030. Now, keep in mind, when I told Howard that I wanted to talk about this here, this was a couple months ago, and my slides were due a couple weeks ago, and we still didn't know that President Trump was going to invest $500 billion in AGI and ASI. But now we know, and this is pretty close to right, OpenAI. We're going to see quantum computing, augmented humanity, sustainable, focused innovation. I think that we're also in the era of agent, the agent era. What I mean by that is this. All the systems and the things that you're using to help you work are going to be replaced by adaptable, intelligent agents. So the way that you do work today, just like we saw in the 70s, remember, isn't going to be the way that you work 10 years from now. And so with that much change, because think about it, 50 years ago, we kind of got our first computers, right? Now we're talking about intelligent, adaptable agents replacing systems and things that we have in place. So there's going to be a lot of change. And so what I want to do for just the next 15, 20 minutes is to give you four key things that you can focus on in your organization as you're thinking through, are we an AI-ready culture and organization? Okay, is that cool? Everybody with me? Okay. So the first one that we want to look at is human and AI collaboration. So with the human and AI collaboration, I want you to think of things a little bit different, okay? I want you to think of your subordinates are the machines. Your human capital is your collaborators and your brand ambassadors. I know it sounds really weird, but I really need you to think about this. Who reports and is a subordinate to you is going to be the machines. The humans are your brand ambassadors and your collaborators. This is where the innovation is going to lie in your organization. As leaders, I need you to have a tech fluency, meaning you've got to know what's disrupting your industry, what tech is out there. See how it used to be back in the day is when Betty retired, we would just fill Betty's seat. We wouldn't even look to think about what does Betty do? How can we automate Betty's job? What's out there? What tools are out there that we can replace Betty? We just replace Betty. If you don't have tech fluency, if you don't understand what's out there that can help you in your organization, you're going to replace Betty, replace Betty, replace Betty. Why your competitor is innovating and innovating and putting tech in, and Betty's not needed anymore. Betty's needed somewhere else, so they've already started reskilling their workforce and upgrading different positions to prepare for letting AI do what AI can do and letting the humans do what only the humans can do. Does that make sense? But if you don't have tech fluency, you won't know how to structure your organization in a way to know, I've got to get this people the skills to do X, Y, Z, because we're going to replace those positions. Make sense? We're good? Is anybody ready to run out of here? Scared to death. Sorry. I always said it like this. I work for my team. As the boss, I served over 400 employees. I always said, you don't work for me, I work for you. We've got to change that mindset. We've got to think about how can I help the humans be successful in the workplace, right? And then lastly, as far as creating this human and AI collaboration is, you've got to, and I know it's hard, but you've got to learn how to disaggregate, separate the treatment of your AI and your humans. What do I mean by that? Did you guys see me do that exercise where I talked to chat? Did you hear me say please? Did you hear me say thank you? I didn't. See, we talked to Alexa. My husband, he's so funny. We'll walk around the neighborhood, and we have the dog, we're walking, and if he sees a window open, he's like, hey, Alexa! He's like, everybody has Alexa. I'm like, you're so wrong for that. But think about it. We're so accustomed to talking to AI that we've lost our manners. So when we go and talk to Joe, we forget to say please and thank you. We need to learn to separate how we treat the AI versus how we treat the humans. And don't forget that the humans are human beings. Very important. And so that's something that I really want people to take away from this, is just don't forget humans are humans, robots are robots. The next thing is we've got to set up our organizations for adaptive leadership. Where are my glasses here? Number one, we want to be watching for change fatigue. So you're going to see so much change in so little time that the workforce can become fatigued from all the change. So you've got to have a high level of emotional intelligence and empathy. And we've got to make sure that you understand the human dynamics. Again, why do you think IBM former CEO said, it's about the people? I know we're talking about all this tech, but it's about the human workers. Adaptability is more than strategy. It's a mindset. It's got to become a way of doing business. So we need leadership, very adaptable. Here's another thing that we don't think about, but it's really important, is communication with the truth. As leaders, you've got to have timely communication. Your workforce, if you're thinking about automating or changing something in your workforce, your employees are not stupid. They know what's going on. We've got to learn to address rumors. We've got to communicate timely, and we need to be authentic in our communication. If you're planning to add some automation, talk about it. I'll tell you an example. So at the call center in Kansas, when I was a director, I had been working on double monitors. I know you're like, I have like four monitors now, is probably what you're thinking. At the time, most people just had one. So I decided, as the leader, that I was going to bring in double monitors for all of my agents, because they would be faster, and they would have all the tools, and they would be so happy, and they would be like, oh, Crystal's amazing. So one day when they come back from the weekend, everybody has two monitors on their desk. I wasn't amazing. They hated me. The grievances started filing. It was a union environment. And I thought, why do these people not like the monitors? I'm going to do it to help them. So I didn't institute that change well, right? I didn't communicate with them. I didn't show them the benefits. And it was a lack of communication. And so I had instant resistance to that change. So then I had to go and change the narrative and say, these monitors can help you do your job. If you choose to use them, you don't have to. But here Patty started using them, and then Linda started using them, and realized how fast they got. About 2 months later, I got a request from the union. They wanted three monitors. But I had tyranny on day one because I did not communicate. So communication is key. The other thing on the adaptive leader is you've got to empower the workforce. How much different could that have story been if I would have empowered them to drive that change instead of me forcing that change on them? The other thing on the adaptive leader is truly just be transparent. And when you communicate, don't just send an email and then say, I don't know why those employees don't do it. I sent an email. It doesn't work like that. So there's multi-channels, and there's a message that has to be reoccurring and consistent. So don't just do one thing and think that, oh, okay, now everybody should know what to do. So think of multi-channel communication, okay? All right, 15 minutes more. Hang in there. We've got two to go. Innovative leadership. So with innovative leadership, like in the old school, we'll say old school, in the 70s, it was very command and control. It was very much hierarchy, almost like authoritarian in a way. It was like, this is what we say and this is what we do. But now what's got to happen to really create an innovative workforce is you have got to, and I mean, you've got to eliminate fear. If people are afraid that they're going to get in trouble, that sounds so silly, doesn't it? If your people are afraid that they're going to get in trouble for creatively trying to do things and innovating, do you think they're going to come to work and be creative? They're going to come to work and do what you tell them to do, and they're going to go home, and you're going to miss out on some beautiful gold in your organization. In my book, The Best Robot Wins, I talk about eliminating fear in the workplace, and it's a checklist. This is so important to innovation. If people are afraid, they're not going to create. It's true, right? When I became an officer in the field, my boss at the time said, Parker, you need to get your steel-toe boots, your PPE bag, and you need to get out in the trucks, because I hadn't had any experience out there. And so when I went out with the employees in the trucks, I kept hearing the same thing over and over again. It was, I wish my supervisor would come out here. And I said, I called my leadership team together, and I said, when was the last time you guys were in the field or sat with the employees or any of that? And they said, we're too busy. We have too much stuff to do. Well, it was also a company full of engineers. Of course, they're not going to want to ride around in the trucks. They want to, like, plug in data and build pipelines. And so we created what we called the ride-along program. And the ride-along program was every leader with exempt title and up had 96 hours that they would go into the field or call center and ride along with the employees. It wasn't a gotcha program. Matter of fact, if there was safety issues or any disciplinary stuff that had to be taken care of, that was taken care of very differently than through this program. It was an empowerment program. Through that program, we would come together every month as a leadership team and talk about the things that we saw the employees doing. One of the employees in the Rio Grande Valley, they figured out, because it's hot down there in Harlingen, they figured out when they went to change out the meter, they would post up one of those umbrellas and do it under the umbrella to keep the sun off their back. Brilliant. It used to be that when we'd pull the meters, our team would throw them up into the truck, and then they'd get to the truck yard and they'd throw them out. Sprains and strains were a big problem for us. One of our employees brilliantly rigged the side of his truck, would put his meters right there, lock them down, take them in, and avoid any potential strain and sprain. There was brilliance upon brilliance upon brilliance that we found in that program right there on the front lines of our organization. See, what happens in organizations oftentimes is all the rules trickle down from the top and in many cases counterproductive for what's happening at the actual work level. And so being able to empower the workforce and eliminate fear. Because imagine if these employees would have thought that this program was a gotcha program, do you think they would have showed anything different than outside of what they were told to do? No way, man. But we got to see into the brilliance of our teams and then institute changes throughout the entire West region of Texas. And when we did that, the entire company, Fortune 200, adopted this program because they understood the power of being on the front lines with the employees and creating an innovative workforce. Cross-function. So it wasn't like one employee would go out to his team. They would go sit in the call center, do different things so that they could understand, oh, when we do this, it impacts you in this way, and this is how it is to the customer. And when you're doing that and creating, you're breaking down the silos. And then we recommend that you reward innovation. Does anybody in here have a way to reward creative ideas or innovation in your organization? Consider it, especially as we move into this new landscape of business. And then last thing that you can do in your organization is really mitigate the risk that's coming, that's already there. I need you to really have a priority on cybersecurity and contingency. Because what happens if we go back to the 70s? Are you ready for that? So we're all moving towards this agent era, but we've got to say, what's our contingency if and when? Do you guys remember when the power went out and all the planes were grounded recently? They went down. Not the planes, thank goodness. But you could see a little glimpse into what's the contingency plan and are we ready? So I really encourage you to do that and really prioritize cybersecurity. Prepare and mitigate change fatigue in your workplace. Be mindful, watch for it, especially for those of you working in safety-sensitive industries. If your employees are distracted, they're not focused, your safety issues could go up, and you'll start to be able to see that, but I'd prefer you deal with it before it happens. So be mindful and watchful of that. Build trust. How do you build trust? Walk the talk. Have ethics high, high priority of trust in the organization. I put this graphic on here of the shadow IT or the fog IT, I call it shadow IT. And that's when employees are working in programs and things outside of your approved things in your workplace because they found tools and things that can help them do their job. Many times employees are using chat, OpenAI, and some other things that may not even be approved in your organization. They're doing it with their own computers. They're coming in and they're becoming the hero. That's an organization that does not have trust. You can open it up and say, if there's any tools or anything that you're using that we need to look at in our IT plan for 25, 26, bring them forward. And then reward them if there's something that gets picked up. But you definitely, there's a major risk in shadow IT, and we're seeing it more and more in organizations. And then create a continuous learning loop. Don't be afraid to say, this didn't work, or how can we do it better next time? In the company I used to work for, they rolled out multi-million-dollar system impacting all of customer service. And it was a rotten lemon. And no matter what they were told, they said, we've sunk this much money into it and all ships are sailing, regardless of knowing that it was a lemon. It cost the company millions of dollars, impact to customer service, and ultimately several people lost their jobs. It's okay to say, hey, we're going to take a new direction and learn and get better as you go along. So I've given you four key things to help you evolve your organization. Are you ready to evolve? Are you ready to become the future CEOs with organizations that are evolving and adapting and standing the test of time? When we come back in 2 years, maybe 10 years, are you going to be sitting in that chair? I think it's all based on the decisions you make today. And it is through leadership, because if we look at those companies that have failed, it's poor leadership decisions, lack of sight, lack of adapting. The greatest enemy to future success is, thank you for listening. Success. This is the future CEO. Versatile leader. Combines technological acumen with emotional intelligence, adaptability, and a commitment to trust and sustainability. They must prioritize talent, innovation, data decision-making, collaboration while being prepared to lead through crisis. Continuous learning is the cornerstone of their leadership style and ensuring they remain at the forefront of the industry development, become tech fluent. And lastly, I created a course. I just wanted to test this. And so I asked a few friends to come in and do a workshop with me and really test it in different industries to see how this could work. And we went through a 17-step process to bringing in innovation into companies. And we did it through this course. And so I have a QR code up here. If you're interested in that course, it's recorded. There's worksheets for you. You can watch it at your leisure. I also have my book here. You'll get a book. And I want to be able to provide that for you so that you can be ready and take those next steps. If you're not up for the course, that's okay, because I'll be outside during the lunch break. Feel free to pick up my card. I'd love to visit with you and understand what's impacting your culture, your company, and your industry. So, if you could stand up with me. I know some of you, those born in the 1900s, it might take a little longer, so be patient with them. Things just hurt a little bit more when you stand up. All right, so I'm going to ask you these questions here. Are you ready to create an AI culture-ready organization? Yes, good. Okay, so are we going to resist new ideas and new technology?
No.
Are we going to break down silos and increase collaboration across the company? Are we going to just rely on our success, our legacy systems, and our products?
No.
You guys are doing great. Are you going to have maybe a little bit of short-term discomfort and make some investments in the long-term future? 100%. Are you going to find a way to encourage risk-taking and innovation in your company? All right. My AI culture ready workforce leadership, amazing people of God, go out, get it done, adapt, evolve, and you will stand the test of time. I'm Crystal Parker, and business is my sport. Thanks for having me today. Thank you, guys. Thank you.